This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Wednesday, 22nd of March, 2023, and therefore FOMC Day. Markets seem to be in a pretty hopeful mood around what the Fed is set to deliver today. Complacent, perhaps, is the word. We'll get to why that may be, but we're leaning for a 25 basis point rate hike today. We've had the forward expectations all over the map over the last couple of weeks, together with that expectations rising, those expectations rising of a 25 basis point move. We have the forward curve also shifting a bit higher still, the terminal rate a little bit higher than it was just a few days ago. And those rate cuts for later this year are still there to a degree, but far less to a degree than we were at the height of the panic here recently. We'll have plenty to talk about there on the FOMC, plenty to work through for now. But one thing to emphasize, Peter, I think we've noted it before, but the weight of the bank declines, bank stock declines, you know, their financials are a heavy-duty component of the S&P 500. So we have bounced well off the lows. We're above 4,000, above the 200-day moving average. But we're nowhere near the same place we are technically if you look over at the NASDAQ 100, where I suppose the celebration is of these much lower rates, a much lower rate environment we have. And we're actually close to almost sort of an upside breakout if we continue higher in the NASDAQ 100. So it's a very, not bifurcated market, but it's a very diverse market out there.
Yeah, and I think that the divergence that we're observing is the reflection of the increase in uncertainty around this FOMC rate event, because we have a huge gap between what the market is pricing in terms of what the Fed is expected to do in terms of rate cuts, 3 rate cuts by the end of the year, versus the inflation fight, which is still on. And as you said before we went on the podcast, John, Dudley, which was a former FOMC voting member, was out with his opinion piece on Bloomberg, and he sounded confused, because they need to fight inflation, but they also need to ensure financial stability. That's that extra variable. And that gap between market pricing and the Fed's outlook, how are they going to handle it? The market is leaning towards 25 basis points. They probably have to do that just to signal that they're not overly concerned about the banks, but still in their language and tone, maybe sound that they have their eyes on the ball. It's a very fine balancing act. And if we look at yesterday's performance, I did a little bit of a change, because you mentioned we had a lot of themes. So I said, okay, we can also just go with the global industry group's performance just to get a different view of the market than we typically do. And you can see that a lot of the high beta industry groups were rallying yesterday, especially car makers were the strongest, together with energy because of the response we saw in oil, etc. But then the weakest were real estate and utilities. And I think I want to point us in the direction of real estate, because if you look at slide 3, we have changed the stocks to watch today to go a little bit further up the food chain here, because banks are still very important to watch. We had a celebration day yesterday, but there are still risks lurking in the system. And as I show here, I've sorted on yesterday's performance. I sorted on the relative performance yesterday, and you can see that it was the Norwegian, Swedish, and Canadian banks that were the weakest. And Svenska Handelsbanken, which is a Swedish bank, was out with a note this morning saying that the cash flow capacity to service debt is deteriorating pretty rapidly now for Chinese real estate firms. And Balder, which is one of the larger real estate firms, were downgraded to junk status a couple of weeks ago. And I just looked up Vonovia. We've mentioned this German residential real estate owner, which is one of the largest in Europe. It hit close to a new low for the cycle yesterday. So I think this is potentially could come in play as the next risk source for banks, and especially those markets, as we mentioned, Norway, Canada, and Sweden, where we have had really excessive housing prices. And I presume in Sweden has the highest sensitivity because of their very high degree of adjustable mortgages. And just rounding out the stocks to watch, just so we have done with that in today's podcast, that Nike reported very strong revenue growth. No upside surprise on the China revenue side of things. So the reopening is still not feeding powerfully through to consumers yet. They missed on the growth margin because of their high materials costs, and they did a lot of write-downs to clear their inventory. That's also why they had the sales beat in the first place, and the investors were a little bit shaky on that outlook and news. So they traded the shares down 2% in extended trading.
Yes, and one thing we have to look at here is not just financial conditions and you know the level of worry out there. We of course look at that, but I loved there was an FT Alphaville article out. I think it was yesterday. Yeah, I put the little title there in on slide four, Why Your Financial Conditions Index Sucks. And I thought this was so appropriate because this whole situation has really developed without any notable aggravation of financial conditions as a warning. It came simply out of the blue, and now we're all scrambling around trying to figure out what the underlying situation here is that could drive further turmoil, or if this was just a one-off, the worst, weakest links. Got into trouble because the pace of the Fed rate hikes, and we can get back to some sense of normalcy longer term if as long as the Fed sort of is seen peaking out and goes flat for a while, or even begins to cut rates slightly. And there is one very unsettling factor here that is not really addressable by what the discussion is, and which is ensuring depositors and therefore preventing a depositor bank runs by depositors, and that is the fact that deposits themselves, as in aggregate, not just in the smaller regional banks, which is with a pinch point where some of the key concerns are for stability and also looking forward for credit transmission into the economy, but in aggregate are falling. And you can see that on slide four with that U.S. commercial bank deposits is a weekly data series. The most recent data point was March 8th, if I'm not mistaken. And this is essentially something that has never happened before, certainly not on a sustained basis as we are seeing now. These deposits are going somewhere. That could be going into other instruments, other treasuries. We talked a little bit about that, Peter. And on the right there, it's a tweet from Jim Bianco talking about the same thing and showing it sort of in a more alarming fashion because it shows the scale of drawdown versus previous. You can kind of get the same information value as from the slide on the the chart on the left. So the standard sort of toolbox for addressing turmoil in the markets is not really germane to what is going on here, Peter. I think that's one of the key underlying factors here. What is a bank? Why should banks exist? And it's not just about some of the mismanaged portfolios, but the fact that these deposits are declining and how it could affect credit transmission and credit growth going forward. All right, so while we're waiting for the Fed, we have the dollar continuing, is remaining on its back foot, really. Look at Eurodollar at a local high there with that markdown of the Fed and the return of or bounce in risk sentiment. That combination is dollar negative. I think we need to be careful how the market treats a Fed not hiking. The house view is that we do not see a hike today officially, and I think there are reasons to be very uncertain around that, but there could be a pause. And if that pause, how that pause is read, is that a sign of, is that a celebration because it means easier financial conditions, or do we see the markets thinking there must be a really bad reason behind this? Maybe the Fed is consulting with the powers that be within banking and find something very unsettling that it feels like it needs to react to. That would be the more negative message. You can see it in Dudley's sort of internal debate, his internal thinking in his article as well in what he's saying there. So we have the dollar on its back foot, an uncertain reaction function, even if they don't hike. And we have dollar yen, sort of flat 132.50 area. Eurodollar again at those local highs. Sterling has really risen a lot on a very hot CPI data point this morning. Very unsettling for that for the Bank of England as we go into that Bank of England meeting tomorrow. The market was about split 50-50 on whether they would hike 25 basis points tomorrow, but that has pretty much become fully priced for a 25 basis point move after the hot CPI data point this morning, plus 1.1% month-on-month on the headline, 10.4% year-on-year. That was an acceleration versus the 0.6 and 9.9 expected and the 10.1 year-on-year from January. And worst yet, the core was at 6.2 versus 5.7 expected year-on-year, and 5.8 was the previous number. So re-acceleration, awkward for a Bank of England, has by far the most aggressive forecast of disinflation going forward, looking for a sub-4% CPI by the end of this year, and for the two-year to, can you believe this, the two-year forecast is for headline CPI to drop to 1%. So a very interesting test of confidence that the Bank of England can deliver as well and how the UK economy can absorb that. And then we see gold sort of consolidating quite aggressively, Ola. So we have still a very strong trending reading, but that was, of course, back in from some wild strength on our FX board. I think the reading was 10, which is very, very unusual. We've seen that come in, but there's a big focus on gold, and it's been one of the proxies for the turmoil or not. What's your read there? I'm going a bit out of order, but what's your read on gold? And we can talk about some of the other commodities here.
Indeed, John. Yes, it's most certainly gold has had a very strong revival during the past few weeks with what has been unfolding in the banking sector. And this week, I've actually put in three slides, all kind of related to speculative data, because that's finally now up to date. We've had this outage or cyber attack back in January, so we've been flying blind for a while in terms of what the funds were doing. Looking at gold, first of all, on slide eight, we obviously now in a corrective phase. We so far managed to find support around that 1931 level, which is the 38.2% retracement. If that holds, that would tell us that this is just a weak correction within a strong uptrend. Further down, and that's where it starts to get a little bit interesting, is in the area just below 1900. We saw from the latest hedge fund data that there was a very, very strong amount of buying in gold in the week up to last Tuesday, so that's March 14th. The VWAP for that week was around 1893. So that's really, you can on balance say, well, that's the level below which where some of those recent established long starts to get hurt. That length would have obviously increased further in the week that followed when we briefly hit 2000 early in the week. But I think that's just the area of pain that we should be aware of to the downside. But generally, the market is pricing in, I believe at this point, a 0.25% rate hike, and anything less than that is likely to send the market higher again.
All right, and then we roll back to the focus again, as you talked about these delayed speculation data or sort of caught positioning data. So the weekly data updating the positioning in the futures market in the U.S. Has revealed some interesting things about where the positioning is in the grain sector.
Indeed, I think the grain sector has really caught the market by surprise when they released their latest figures yesterday. So on slide six, as you can see, the combined grain and oilseed net long, that's basically six contracts in total, collapsed by 82% during the past 4 weeks up until last Tuesday, March 14th. And that was down to 98,000 lots. That's the lowest since August 2020. The damage has really been inflicted by a massive amount of selling in corn, basically record amount of selling during the past 4 weeks, 289,000 lots. Was sold, flipping the net to a short for the first time again since August 2020. What does that tell us? Well, it tells us obviously that the Bloomberg Commodity Index, grain index, was down 7% during that four-week period. But it also, if you look at the corn chart up in the right-hand corner there, we've actually bounced a bit recently. And this is one of the classical situations now that if we do have a change in the technical or the fundamental outlook for corn, then there is a lot of catching up to do from funds. I'd say the same thing goes still for wheat, where the short remains near the most extended since 2018.
And on crude, we have somewhat of a correlation here in what the crude market is doing and sort of rates and sentiment here. But what are things that we should focus on for crude oil outside of that?
I think for now, it's most certainly primarily a question of what financial traders are doing in this market, because I think the drop below 70 in WTI and below 80 in Brent is potentially not what the supply and demand outlook justifies right now. At this point in time, the market's trying to preempt some further slowdown in the months to follow. So based on that, I think the financial traders will be in control or has been in control for the past week or so. And again, then just take a look at the numbers. We've seen quite a dramatic reduction in the net long in WTI crude, and that basically means that it's cut to a 3-year low, basically down 30% in the week to last Tuesday. And that tells me that considering the market continued to sell off after last Tuesday, probably most of the long liquidation that needed to be carried out has been carried out by now. And we can see through the open interest, which has been rising, that the short selling has also increased. Some of that probably has also reached close to their peak at this point. So all to play for, I'd say. The downside levels we should look out for is really that key area in around 62 in WTI. That's obviously quite a bit. It's almost 10% away now. That is a massive flaw in the market. And there's been a little bit of a chatter about the 200-week moving average on some of the media today. And you can see the green line there where that comes in. So again, that's also a level where we have managed to close above so far this so far during this this correction phase.
All right, well, watch for that. Meanwhile, if we look over at, as discussed, tech stocks have managed to sail through this little episode with ease, and especially a stock like NVIDIA. Peter, we have NVIDIA looks like it's the cat with nine lives here, and absolutely crushed by the sort of, you know, the excesses that were, you know, of the pandemic, a blow-off top there as the crypto industry reversed, all that NVIDIA sales associated with the crypto industry, but as crypto sort of calmed, we've got a bit of a revival in crypto as people are interesting playing it as a possible vote of for at least for Bitcoin on the entire stability of the financial system, but as well this whole AI and ChatGPT angle apparently. So take us through that and what you're what we're looking at there on slide 9.
Yeah, so we're looking at a lot of the technology companies and their 12-month EV to sales ratio, with the dark blue line there being being NVIDIA. And as you can see, NVIDIA had a very stable valuation in the way the market was pricing its revenues until around 2016, when crypto, or Bitcoin, I should say, very specifically, because that's the one that is utilizing the most compute power for verification through its mining process. And it began accelerating there, and then you saw the big repricing in NVIDIA, and the decline in NVIDIA stock has been matching the decline in the Bitcoin price. So Meta is a proxy for crypto activity, and as you can see, has been.
You mean NVIDIA? This year, you said Meta is a proxy. NVIDIA is a proxy for.
It's a proxy for crypto. And what you can see as well this year is that with the whole talk about ChatGPT, and now we got the latest version, the fourth edition, there's a lot of hype. There's also a lot of excitement because it's a technology that can streamline and increase productivity in some rudimentary tasks and to a great degree. There's been this two major factors driving the sentiment in NVIDIA shares, and you can just see how it completely decoupling. It was already decoupled when Bitcoin was trading close to $70,000. That had a very excessive valuation there, and we came through the interest rate shock all the way down within line, I would say, with the rest of the technology sector. But now we're back into lofty territory, and I just want to highlight, I think it's a key risk for NVIDIA, although I think it's a phenomenal company. I like it. I like the industry. I like semiconductors, but you always have to be careful about what price you're paying, even for a very strong, high quality business. And I think the speculative element from its link into Bitcoin mining means that you have to be prepared for big swings. And I just want to highlight it. But otherwise, the technology stocks are doing great, as you say, John. And a technology stock that is not doing as great on slide 10, earnings to watch, is Tencent. So Tencent is expected to report earnings today. And as you can see here on the quarterly financials metrics that we show on the little insert, you can see how revenue growth have come down pretty significant. And it's all due to general lockdown and slowdown in the Chinese economy, but certainly also regulation in all matters of technology, from the disentanglement of different digital services, regulation on how fast you can roll out games, what is the utilization of games, especially among younger people, etc. So you can just see here from the revenue growth rate that it's difficult times for Tencent, first time ever in its history. But analysts are quite enthusiastic about the outlook. As you can see, the outlook for the current quarter we're in is that revenue growth will jump to 7% on that reopening, and that's a tall order of expectations they have to meet there, Tencent. So we will be watching that, whether they can deliver on that outlook. And then tomorrow, when we look ahead, we'll be looking at Accenture, and I should maybe have highlighted Darden Restaurants. I think you like that, John, as a good proxy for whether people in the U.S. are willing to spend a lot of discretionary money on going out dining.
Yes, indeed. And takes us to the macro calendar today. As indicated, Mr. Powell is in the hottest of hot seats as Fed chair in that press conference. I don't envy his task in delivering a message, which will be difficult to deliver, a coherent one at least, as the cleverest pundits are pointing out, balancing the financial contagion risks, financial stability risks here with the ongoing fight against inflation. Could not come at a worse time, this type of crisis. And I think the debate in that Dudley article, I could not find the public version of that. It may be only available on internally to Bloomberg. I don't know. But in any case, I think that debate is also spelled out in his piece there. The 50 base points, of course, off the table. It leaves the Fed to choose 0 or 25, he says. A pause could actually unsettle. And that's what I think would be very interesting. If they do pause, as Arlene is in the House view, the critical thing will be, of course, how the market reacts to that as a vote of confidence in that it'll support the market at all costs or that something is more wrong than the market realizes. And I don't have an answer for how the market reaction function would be for a pause. So he says a pause could unsettle by indicating concern about the health of the economy or the situation. That could be somewhat mitigated with higher guidance, but nonetheless. And then on the other side, a hike, that could be problematic in hindsight if this bank malaise worsens. So, yeah, good luck. Mr. Powell is essentially what but Dudley is saying. I wish Mr. Powell good luck as well. It'll be a very, very interesting meeting. Look for live coverage of that on Twitter from myself and Sten Jakobsen potentially as well during that meeting. And do recall for those of us here in Europe that the U.S. is still on a different time setting as they went to daylight savings before we did. So it is up at for us on Central European time at 7 o'clock this evening with a press conference starting at 7:30. We'll be looking forward to that. Stay very careful out there. Be careful also of the initial reaction functions and be open-minded to how this market could react to whatever the Fed chooses here. And we'll stay on our toes and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.